from NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Beginning, middle, end. That is a story in its simplest terms. Writer Walter Mosley has published over 50 beginnings, middles, and ends in his storied career. He's best known for his mystery series featuring Easy Rollins, an African-American World War II veteran turned private eye. And Mosley's novels show us that between those beginnings, middles, and ends, there's some kind of magic that happens that makes for great writing. But can that magic be wrestled down into craft? Well, in his latest book, Mosley takes on this question of how to create fiction that transcends. So this hour on Point, a conversation with writer Walter Mosley. And you can join us. Has Walter Mosley's work impacted you as a reader? Do you have a favorite book or passage? And writers or aspiring writers, what question do you have for the master of this craft, for one of the masters, Walter Mosley? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, Walter Mosley joins us today from the studios of NPR West in Culver City, California. His Easy Rollins series consists of 14 books, beginning with Devil in a Blue Dress, which was published in 1990. The most recent installment of that series is Charcoal Joe, which was published in 2016. And Mosley's new book on writing is called Elements of Fiction, and we have an excerpt of that at onpointradio.org. Walter Mosley, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
It's a great pleasure to have you. I want to talk about writing, first of all, simply through your writing, through Easy Rollins and the books that you've written featuring him. I mean, for folks who don't know, first of all, I mean, how would you describe, you know, who is Easy Rollins and how did you create him?
Well, I mean, Easy Rollins is a character, a black man in America coming out of World War II. Who's, you know, has lived in the South his whole life, but now realizes after his experiences in Europe that he has to go somewhere else. He comes to California like so many people did then, and he begins to form a new life. So you can see what's new in his life contrasted with a history that's been, you know, on his shoulders and everybody else's for 400 years. Mm-hmm. And so it's a way of seeing and experiencing what's going on, but also understanding a history that's not usually exposed in literature.
Yeah, so talk to me more about that. I mean, was that a big motivation for you in terms of why, how you formed Easy Rollins as a character and also, you know, where you located him?
Well, you know, one of the things that I understand is that if you don't exist in literature, fictional literature, you don't exist in history in America. You just don't. And so the idea of talking about that migration of black people from the Western South into Southern California and to a bit to Central California, to write that story is to actually make the people who I know and love a part of history.
Yeah, so that's really fascinating to me because, I mean, this is much, much more than simply writing what you know, right? It's giving voice to what you know and people who you know and love and experiences, like you said, that hadn't had that voice before. I mean, tell me a little bit more about growing up, how you saw particularly African-American men portrayed in literature?
Well, on the whole, we weren't mm-hmm. portrayed in literature. And when we were, it was, you know, the slave or the ex-slave, the sidekick, the shoeshine, the pimp. There were certain, you know, characteristics that we could have. But we would read it and go, well, but that's not me. And that's not anybody I know. I mean, what? And, you know, so the idea of, you know, talking about somebody, you know, cooking dinner for their children, that's like, it's crazy. No, nobody would write that because it's, you know, there's no time in a literature that's, you know, about another world to take a chapter and talk about, you know, a pimp making dinner for his children, you know. And of course, you're not going to write that, you know.
Well, so let's listen to a little bit about a little bit from your most recent Rollins novel, Charcoal Joe, which came out in 2016. There's a passage that I think you probably have before you. Could you read it to us?
Sure. It's a long way from West L.A. to Watts. It's the same city, but a darkness descends as you progress eastward. You pass from white dreams into black and brown realities. There were many miles to cover, but distance was the least of it. It was another world where I was going. In West Los Angeles, when people looked at their TVs, they saw themselves and what they wanted to be. James Arness and Lauren Green, Mary Tyler Moore and Lucille Ball. They had their own jokes and music and interpretations of right and wrong in the world. People in Watts saw the same shows, but not their faces, their dreams, the hard facts of their lives. In Watts, people spoke the same language in different dialects and at separate schools. For darker-skinned citizens, employment was synonymous with toil. The police were often the enemy, as the motorcycle cop had been for me out in Studio City.
Well, that's Walter Mosley reading an excerpt from Charcoal Joe, his most recent E.Z. Rollins novel. That came out in 2016. And we're talking to Walter Mosley today about his latest book, which is called Elements of Fiction and the Craft of Writing here. So I'm wondering if you could sort of school us a little bit in terms of, let's use this Rollins passage as an example. What are some of the tricks here, not tricks, but crafts that you're using to bring to light? It's kind of a, this is a meeting of Rollins' internal world and the external world that he's driving us through. How did you do that?
Well, I think something that you said before, you know, rather than, you know, just writing what you know, what you're doing is giving voice to a people. Voice is a very important part of, you know, elements of fiction. And I think that you, what you do is you work, you keep working and working until you find a voice that, you know, whatever it is, first person, third person, that really resonates with the experience of those people. And then the information inside of it is underneath that voice. And so, you know, when E.Z. Rollins starts to drive toward toward Watts, he is experiencing it. He's feeling it. He's watching it. And you're watching it. Mm-hmm. But you're not seeing it as, well, you know, then I saw this street and then I saw that street and there was this hovel over here and a big building over there. What you're doing is you're feeling like this kind of transition from one world into another, but it's all in the same world. And, you know, and getting to that, it's an interesting thing. You know, when I talk about the elements of fiction, the most important part about, well, two things. The most important part about reading is rereading. Uh-huh. You can't just read a book and say, "Oh, I got that book." You know, that the author put a lot of work in that book, and you need to put the same level of work in order to get it. But it's also true about writing. Writing is rewriting. You write it down, you get pretty much what you thought you were saying. You read it again, and you say, "Oh no, I missed this," and then you read it again, and you say, "Oh no, I missed that. I didn't get that." You know, and you know, for me, every once in a while, I'll even read it into a tape recorder so I can hear it, uh-huh. You know, because that's what talking is about. I mean, writing is a wonderful thing, but it's all about talking. And, you know, that's a small part of what it takes to write something like this.
Yeah. You know, if I may, I'm just going to come out and admit to you that I find the idea of writing fiction to be terrifying. Mostly because, I mean, it's the creation of an entire world. The possibilities are literally infinite, and the responsibilities are therefore really great too. Not to say that nonfiction writers have it easier, but there does seem to me to be some kind of, I keep using the word alchemy, but something just beyond the grasp of most people, and that you kind of know great fiction when you see it. I mean, what is that thing that seems just beyond the grasp of most writers?
Well, you know, I think that all the things that you said are true, except maybe the thing about nonfiction, and that, there's all of these things in the way of it. It's such a big world, so many experiences, how do you do it? But the wonderful thing is that it is possible. And we know it's possible because there are books. We look at books, we read them, say, oh, you know, somebody wrote this. And the thing is not to have, excuse me, too high an expectation of yourself in the beginning. If you don't have that high expectation, then you make one pass and another pass and another pass and another. And that makes it much easier.
Yeah. What kind of expectations did you have for yourself when you first started considering writing as a career?
Well, before I say that, I just want to say there's more truth in fiction than there is in nonfiction. Because nonfiction says I'm talking about an objective world. I'm talking about a real world. I'm talking about something that happened. Then you write down as much of it as you can, and you start editing out things. And when you edit out things, it's actually an act of censorship in nonfiction. because you say, well, Ronald Reagan did this, but I don't need to talk about that, so I'll take that out. You know, and either it's a good thing or a bad thing, depending on what you feel about Ronald Reagan. So nonfiction is actually more fictional than fiction is. If a well-written novel will tell you a truth like in the heart of an experience, and a well-written nonfiction won't lie too much.
That's bold. Those are fighting words. I love it. Okay, so Walter Mosley, then. So tell me though. Okay, so if you say that fiction possesses a greater, more truth in it than nonfiction, but what is that truth? Is it the truth of a character? Is it getting back to where you're saying the truth of a voice of a people
a
you're trying to capture?
A voice, a world, an emotional experience. You know, and you know, you can fail at doing that in fiction, but you have a much better chance of getting there because you're making it up. Nothing is a lie. You're not trying to lie to me. You're trying to be true to these characters, this world, this moment, this experience, and that's what's I think wonderful about fiction. You know, and it's you know, and I think it's nonfiction writers need to think about that. They need to say, well, how am I honest to the objectivity that I'm trying to approach? And in a novel, it's a bit easier because you can actually get there.
Well, we are talking this hour with Walter Mosley. He's the author of more than 50 books, including the major best-selling mystery series featuring E.Z. Rollins. His new book is about it's called The Elements of Fiction. It's about the craft of writing and how to create fiction that truly transcends. So what is your question for a master of this craft, for Walter Mosley? You heard him just say that he thinks fiction possesses greater truths than nonfiction. What do you think about that? We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Walter Mosley. He is the author of more than 50 books, including the best-selling mystery series featuring E.Z. Rollins. His new book is called Elements of Fiction, where he explores how great writing, how great fiction is made. And we have an excerpt of the book at our website, onpointradio.org. And we want to hear from you. What are your questions for this true master of the craft of writing? Now, Mr. Mosley, if I can, I just want to play a little bit from the film adaptation of Devil in a Blue Dress, the debut of the E.Z. Rollins series. The film was made in 1995, starring, of course, Denzel Washington as E.Z. Rollins. And in this scene, you'll hear Rollins and DeWitt Albright, a white man played by Tom Sizemore, who asks E.Z. to track down a missing white woman.
I'm just looking for somebody.
For a friend.
Daphne Monet.
Fiancée of Todd Carter.
She's been gone 2 weeks.
It upset the poor man so much he stopped running for mayor.
I never laid eyes on.
That's a shame. See, Daphne has a predilection for the company of Negroes. She likes jazz and pig's feet and dark meat. Know what I mean?
Predilection,
yeah. I go looking for him myself, but not the right persuasion, so to speak.
It's Tom Sizemore and Denzel Washington in the 1995 film adaptation of Devil in a Blue Dress. Walter Mosley, can a film ever do justice to the novel upon which it's based?
Well, that's an interesting wording. Can it do justice to the novel? That's probably it can. It can't be a novel. I mean, that's the question. I mean, a novel can do a lot more than a film can. But films can do, you know, fantastic things. The difference between the two mediums is you're actually creating the images in your head when you're reading, which makes the mind work in certain ways and think in certain ways that a film, you know, just can't do. It can't do that particular, you know, translation. But, you know, films can be wonderful. I love Devil in a Blue Dress. I thought it was a great film.
Yeah. Well, so before your writing career took off, it took off in what, when you were in your 30s, right?
Right.
So what were you doing before that?
I was a computer programmer, a potter, a cook, many things.
Was writing always in your heart? Was it sort of a dream deferred for a while?
No, I never thought about writing until I was about 34, 35. And then I sat down one day and I wrote a sentence. I really liked it. And I said, hey, maybe I could be a writer. And then I started from there.
Okay, so that's quite a leap then from just saying I wrote a sentence to then becoming a best-selling novelist. I mean, what were those early days?
Well, that wasn't the intention. The intention was just to be able to write a story.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm from California. That's the way people in California think. Oh, you know, I'm 80 years old and I just retired and I'm pretty limber. Maybe I should study the ballet. You know, that's how I understand life, being from California. I live in New York, but my heart is still somewhere, you know, in California. I wrote a sentence. It says, on hot, sticky days in southern Louisiana, the fire ants swarmed. I wrote that and I said, hey, that sounds good. I've read novels that kind of start like that. And it must be fiction because I've never been to Louisiana, nor have I seen a fire ant. So let me try. And I tried and, you know, it worked.
Yeah,
I was happy.
Boy, did it ever work. So what were there, who were your literary heroes growing up?
Well, you know, literary heroes is such an interesting thing, you know, because, you know, writers are always like, oh, well, it was Shakespeare, it was Gabriel Garcia Marquez, it was Herman Melville, you know, like, you know, just wanting to compare themselves to great writers. I mean, I started off reading comic books. Jack Kirby, I mean, he wasn't even a writer. He was like the artist. He was my hero. He told stories in ways I thought, God, this is amazing, you know. And, of course, I read children's books. I read Winnie the Pooh and all these things. And when you're a kid and you're reading things, that your mind is so creative. You're off in that world. You can't even be pulled out of it. You're dreaming it. You're living it. You're eating it. And so I think, you know, all of those things, you know, comic books, children's books, being read to, learning how to write myself, which, you know, was a wonderful thing, you know, learning letters and then, you know, putting them together.
Mm-hmm. Well, so a bit about comic books, like many, many people feel exactly that those books are really formative in terms of their love of reading, writing, of story. When you said you'd open those comic books and read them and you'd say, this is amazing. What was the this that was so amazing?
It reached out to my, you know, young and then adolescent heart and dealt with the conflicts that I was having. You know, Spider-Man was dealing with those conflicts of, you know, not quite fitting in, being able to do things but always getting in trouble. You know, the Fantastic Four, all of this stuff I'm reading and I'm going, this is actually speaking to what I'm thinking, how I'm feeling. And, you know, a lot of time, you know, and later on, you know, that became true of, you know, literature, of novels, you know, when I was maybe 13, 14, I started reading Hesse, I think, you know, and some other stuff. But it, you know, the younger you are when you're 5 and 6 and 7, those books, they're so important. You know, they really form you. And if you can get into them, they hold you.
Yeah.
And, you know, so from, you know, the age of 7 to the age of 34, you know, I wasn't writing, but of course, literature was in my heart.
Yeah. I mean, what you're saying, it's definitely resonating with millions of people. One of my favorite things to do growing up was to get a great book and just go into my room and close the door and not come out until it was done, because it was that holy, encompassing experience that is just so wonderful. No matter what age you are, but somehow it feels like I was more easily absorbed when I was a kid. But Mr. Mosley, we actually got some callers who have some questions or reflections that they want to share with you. So let's go to Andrew, who's calling from Burlington, Vermont. Andrew, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I just wanted to call and say that I agree with Mr. Mosley about your comment about nonfiction being fewer lies. And I found your other comment that those are fighting words. I used to produce and write celebrity biographies for TV, and I found it extraordinarily hard to write truthful stories and cut out a lot of stuff. I actually just at times wanted to just take over the story and write my own fiction because it was much easier. And, you know, it's very hard to tell only portions of a person's life as a, like you said, make up the whole universe. So, you know, I just want to say I agree with that.
Well, thank you.
Well, Andrew, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Aaron, who's calling from New Orleans. Aaron, you're on the air.
Hi. My question for your guest is how we so often, us aspiring writers here, write what you know. And his inspirational sentence was about something he didn't know, and I'm calling from South Louisiana, incidentally. So my question is, how do you develop a comfort and a flow in writing when you're writing about things that you don't know?
Well, I think that what I would say to anyone is write what you love. You know, because I'm not from Louisiana, but my father was. And he's the person that came out of me when I wrote that, you know. And what you love is, you know, who knows what that's going to be? You know, you could be, you know, somebody, you know, who's, you know, the son of a classical violinist. And the only thing that you love is the blues, right? You don't know the blues, but when you hear it, you go, oh, my God, you know, that's what I want. You know, and also, you know, it's what you also are writing what you desire, what you would like to be true, what you fear is true. I think that the idea of write what you know sounds like somebody saying, talking about nonfiction. He says, well, I know how to be a mechanic, so I'm going to write about being a mechanic. Well, it might be interesting. I don't know. It might not be fiction, though.
Mm. Well, Walter Mosley, in your new book, Elements of Fiction, and by the way, Aaron, thank you so much for your call from New Orleans. But in Elements of Fiction, you're really exploring what are the parts of a great novel that make this novel just transcend, right? I mean, I keep using that word, but how do you make a great novel that stands the test of time, that breaks through convention? Not, you know, not just how do you write a book. So you're asking a very specific question here. And for example, like in one of the chapters, you begin by just simply asking, what is the structure in fiction? I mean, does this question of how do you write a great novel need to be broken down into those like almost concrete aspects of writing? So what is your answer to what is structure in fiction?
Well, there are a lot of things in structure, but the major structure that I'm dealing with in this book is the structure of revelation.
Mm-hmm.
When you allow the audience to know what. The thing is that because, you know, all fiction and much of nonfiction is like a mystery. You don't know in the beginning what happened. Something has happened, but you don't know why it's happened. You don't know who it's happened to. You don't know, you know, what's going on. And you have to follow it down. And the moment that you reveal something is the moment that you have the strongest impact. And what you reveal and how you reveal it is the most important thing that you can do. It's true about character. It's true about place. It's true about the story itself, how, you know, the people are interacting. It's true about language. I can't go like through the whole like the idea of all the different things, you know, character development, voice, dialogue, point of view. I mean, there's all these various things that you have to deal with. Poetry, for instance. I mean, if you don't understand poetry, you probably can't write. Mm. I mean, I don't say that you should be a poet, because being a poet's a difficult thing, but you should at least understand what the poet does when they approach language. And language itself is a big deal, because really, honestly, a novel is just language, written language. It's not pictures. It's not smells. It's just language.
So, but about the structure of revelation and the different kinds of revelation, I mean, how does a writer know, other than, I mean, you said earlier, writing and rewriting and rewriting and rewriting. What manner of revelation is right for whatever part of their story?
It's so difficult. You have to discover it. One of the examples in the book is there's a woman who comes to a town. She's walking. She's been in the desert. She's partially delirious. She talks to 8 different people, and to each person she talks to, she tells a different story. So we understand that she's lying. Reading it, we go, no, what, wait a second, you told this one this, and that, this is something absolute the opposite, and this is the opposite. What's going on in this story? And at some point or another, we're going to have to reveal what her, you know, in quotes, real story is. And it may be just one of the things that she said. It might be a combination of all the things that she said. And then we have to understand why she's doing it and what her relationship is to the place that she's come to and the people that she's talking to. All of those things have to happen, you know. And you can't just, you know, beforehand, you know, one of the things I always say is a novel is bigger than your head. It's mm-hmm. bigger than your conscious mind. You can't know all that stuff from the beginning. So what you do is you just start writing it and you see what happens. You know, and you might say, oh, no, I don't like this, you know, this trustworthy narrator. I would like, you know, to do something else. And then you might go there and then you'll come back and say, no, the trustworthy narrator was... That was the right way to do it. I just didn't go far enough. I mean, there's all kinds of ways, but there's a moment of discovery. And that's a very important thing. Yeah, you know, there's no just sitting down, figuring it out, writing your flow chart and saying, OK, now this is the novel. Because once you start writing, things change.
Yeah, so I was just going to ask you about that, because some writers, they do use a more sort of concrete and structured approach. It sounds like you wouldn't recommend that at all.
Well, you know, listen, I think it's a good way to start. You write an outline. The other day, I was just finishing a novel recently, and I wrote the whole novel. I went back through, and there was one like kind of strain going through it that wasn't working. It wasn't working logically. So here I have the whole book written, and I wrote a second outline just to answer that problem. So I wrote a second outline. I said, well, first this happened somewhere, and then that happened somewhere, and then this, you know, and then I had to go back through the novel and make all the changes to make the second outline, the after I wrote the novel outline, fit into what I had done. You know, outlines are, you know, they're interesting, you know, but they're just a tool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, you know, saying, well, you know, you need a Bic pen in order to write a novel. I was saying, well... You might be able to use a number two pencil. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Bruce, who's calling from Aiken, South Carolina. Bruce, you're on the air.
Okay, hello. Thank you. All right. First off, I want to say, Mr. Mosley, you are one of my favorite authors. I've been reading your books for the past over 20 years, and I just want to say thank you for that, for your contribution. My question to you is, how long does it actually take you to actually write the characters in the storyline? How long does that take? Because like with your E.Z. Rawlings books, sometimes I know sometimes it was like maybe a year or two gap, maybe three within the E.Z. Rawlings series. So how long does it actually take you to number one, to develop it, cultivate everything? How long does that take? That process take? Thank you so much, and look forward to reading more of your books. Thank you.
Thank you. The shortest time it's ever taken me to write a book was 6 weeks.
Wow.
And there were two books, Gone Fishing and Killing Johnny Fry. Those two books, 6 weeks. The longest book it ever took me to write is John Woman. That took 18, 19 years to write that book. I just kept, you know, stumbling when I was writing that book. Most books, it takes about 6 months. You just, you know, and you know, because one of the big things about writing, I tell everybody, if you want to write, you write every day. You wake up every morning and you write every morning, 365 days a year. You don't have to be that long, 2-3 hours, but it has to be every day. And on that schedule, about 6 months for most books that I'm working on.
And so do you have a set time of day that you do this?
I do it the first thing I wake up in the morning.
Okay. And what if you're hit with writer's block that morning? What do you do?
Yeah, writer's block's an interesting thing because, you know, it sounds like one thing, but it could be many things. Writer's block could be like a deep, unconscious, you know, damage that you actually can't get around because there's something that you don't know that's telling you can't do this. A writer's block, you know, might be that, you know, you're just nervous or you haven't had enough time to digest the data, something like that. Well, you just start writing something else. I was like, I can't write this right now, so I'm going to put that aside, and I'm going to write this other thing. And, you know, that's fine. You have to discover what the block is. Does it mean you should just go to something else, or you should go to a psychotherapist? And it depends. You know, I mean, you know, it's like, it sounds like it's a writer's block. That's one thing. No, it could be 100 different reasons that you have writer's block.
Well, we are talking this hour with Walter Mosley. He is the best-selling novelist of the E.Z. Rollins series, amongst others, I should say. He has a new book out about the craft of writing. It's called Elements of Fiction, and we want to know what your question is for Walter Mosley. We'll be back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmanning, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, On Point listeners. I'm poet and author Shinyi Pai. As you celebrate Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, I invite you to listen to the 10,000 Things podcast from KUOW and the NPR Network. 10,000 Things is a podcast about modern artifacts of Asian American life, ordinary objects that tell extraordinary stories and reveal something profound about the experience of being Asian in America. Find 10,000 Things from KUOW and the NPR Network, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking with master writer Walter Mosley. He is the author of more than 50 books, including the E.Z. Rollins Mystery Series, a best-selling series. That's just one of his many characters that have become a major part of American fiction. He has a new book out about writing fiction. It's called Elements of Fiction, and it's an exploration of how great fiction is made. You can find an excerpt of it at onpointradio.org. And Walter Mosley, we've got a lot of comments coming in, for example, over Twitter here. Leslie Small says, I love the E.Z. Rollins' books. Never having had the chance to meet him, they give me a glance into what my grandfather's life as a black vet and a migrant from Mississippi to Chicago during that period would have been like. So Leslie talking about, harkening back to what we were talking about a couple of minutes ago about giving voice to people who may not exist in the American mind because they didn't exist in American fiction. So really resonating there. You know, our caller, Bruce, before the break, he asked about character development as well. And I wanted to get a little bit more from you about that, because you do write about that in Elements of Fiction. Could you read a passage from the book about characters for us?
Sure. The potential of the narrative real estate the writer controls is obvious. But this power can also be a hindrance to good fiction. Sometimes we load up our players with knowledge and understanding that they don't really have access to. Sometimes, instead of revealing a truth, we simply have one of our players say it or act it out. Our beasts of burden can carry a tin skillet, but that doesn't mean that they can prepare a mess of grits. They exist in a world of sublime articulation, but they themselves often have little idea of what transpires in that world. And so we have it. The character is much like a great boxer in his prime. He can bob and weave, has knockout power in either hand, has extraordinary endurance, but for all that, he is cursed with a glass jaw. Therefore, his abilities have to be used judiciously, because even just a well-placed jab could negate all that he has accomplished.
That's Walter Mosley reading from his new book, Elements of Fiction. How do you meet your characters? How do you discover who they are?
Actually, I mostly meet them by writing. I start writing, and I remember when I first wrote about E.Z. Rollins, I was writing a short story. And it was a first-person narrator, but we didn't know who he was. He says, his name was Raymond, and we called him Mouse because he was small and had sharp features. We could have called him Rat because he really wasn't very nice, but the name Mouse stuck on him. Now, the it goes on and on and on, and this woman comes in that the narrator's interested in, Etta Mae, and then Mouse comes in. And Mouse comes in, and he looks at the narrator and says, "Hey, Easy, how you doing?" This is the first time I knew his name. And I didn't, I thought I was writing about Mouse, but indeed, I'm going to be writing about Easy Rollins, you know, for the rest of time. And, you know, it's just, you know, you discover while you're writing. For me, anyway. I mean, other people might be different, you know.
Okay, so tell, this is, I keep coming back to this, and please forgive me, but that is the, to me, that's the magic. Like, when you write that phrase, that sentence, "Hey, Easy, how you doing? And you, the writers say that's the first time you knew his name. Those words flowed from your hand, though. I mean, what happened in that moment that led to that?
Well, it's such a difficult thing to say. I mean, and I'm not sure one wants to say that. I mean, what I try to do is get people to have confidence in what's unconscious in them, what's sleeping inside of them and comes out. Like when you write today, you get to a certain place, and then for the next 20 hours, someplace in your unconscious, it's working. Mm. And then when you wake up the next morning to sit down and write again, there's new things there. They come naturally. It's part of the machinery. Now to say, well, I want to understand how the unconscious works. Well, you know, you can go study psychoanalysis. That'll be fine. But the thing is that I just, you know, it's there. It's a talent that, you know, almost all of us have. Maybe all of us have. And we could just rely on it.
All of us have. That gives me hope because I'm not sure. I'm definitely not sure I do. But let's go to Barbara, who's calling from Richmond, Virginia. Barbara, you're on the air.
Hi. I don't have a question for Walter. I'm enjoying the interview, but I wanted to let him know that I am one of his favorite fans. In fact, I am rereading one of his older books right now, and it's called "And Sometimes I Wonder About You." I just absolutely love the older ones so much that I decided to do that. So thanks for having him on your show.
Barbara, wait, don't hang up. What is it that you love so much about Walter Mosley's work?
The characters. I am a Black person, and I can identify with a lot of the characters that are in his stories. So, and then I get so much enjoyment from them, and that's what I look for from fiction. And especially when I do audiobooks, that's my favorite format. And when I have an eye issue. So with his, and it's just that they can take me out of whatever it is that I'm going through that I'm not feeling good about right now. And just listening to his books can just make me feel so much better.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Barbara, thank you for your call. Walter, did you want to say something to her?
Well, no. I'm just happy you like my books. That's really good. And Leonid McGill, "Sometime I Wonder About You," I really like that book. It's fun. It's fun. You know, and Leonid McGill is a detective, but you know, an ex criminal, and he lives in the modern world, unlike Easy, who lives, you know, in the past.
Yeah. Well, let's...
by the way, I just wanted to say to you, Meghna, that when you were saying about, you know, if all you have to do, and I'll say this to anyone, all you have to do is take 100 days. And every morning for 100 days, write for 1 hour about the same thing, not different things, but the same thing, a story you want to tell. And after that 100 days, then you can decide whether or not you can write. You can't decide it without at least doing that.
Fair enough. I appreciate you saying that a lot. But I think when I said I wasn't sure about myself, I was really thinking about fiction because it just seems like it's such a different craft. It's like universe.
No, I'm talking about fiction. You should be writing fiction. Write a story about somebody. Write a story about somebody who you kind of know but not well enough to know really what happened. You're just making it up. Try it. Anyway, 100 days.
Okay. Maybe we'll have you back in 100 days and I'll let you know whether I succeeded or failed. Well, let's go to...
You'll succeed.
You know what? I'm feeling inspired here, but I want to go back to our callers here because Leo is calling from Baltimore, Maryland. Leo, you're on the air.
Hi. Mr. Mosley, it's an honor to talk to you.
Thank you.
I'm glad you brought up Leonid McGill. I'm so fascinated with that character. His having both feet in good and evil, his fight with his internal, you know, with his wife, with his girlfriend, with his son that he's trying to keep on the straight and narrow. That series is just awesome. And 2015, it's 4 years later. What's going on? When are we going to get another book?
In January, there's a book coming out called Trouble Is What I Do. And that's the new Leonid McGill. So, in January.
Leo, you don't have that much longer to wait. What do you think?
Can you give me, like, what am I looking forward to? Give me a little snippet.
You're looking toward Leonid McGill. I mean, really, honestly, it's a short book. It has no chapters, and it's about Leonid, whiskey, the blues, and the first people to come over from Europe.
And that's coming out in January of 2020.
In January,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Leo, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Stephen, who's calling from Reliance, South Dakota. Stephen, you're on the air.
Hello. My question is about something that was said earlier. When you write your book and then you read it and you reread it and you edit it and you edit it. I just finished my first novel, and I'm by no means a perfectionist, but I'm curious what you have to say about when it's good enough. When do you stop editing and when do you publish?
You know, I have like an answer for that I always give. You write the book. And then you read it and you say, oh, there's mistakes, I'm going to fix them. And then you read it again and say, oh, there's some more mistakes, I'm going to fix them. And then you do it again and again and again. Let's say you do it 25 times. You read the book, find mistakes, fix them. Read the book, find mistakes, fix them. On the 26th time you read the book, you find mistakes, and you realize you don't know how to fix them. That's when your book is finished.
Huh. Fascinating. Stephen, thank you so much for your call. Let's hop over to Miami, Florida, where Larry is calling from. Larry, you're on the air with Walter Mosley.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. Yourself?
Pleasure to talk with you. I met you several years ago in New York, and you did a book signing, and we were chatting, and you mentioned that you were done with E.G. Rollins, and there weren't going to be any more. And I see you brought it back. So I'm curious
as to
how that happened. And also the process, and I'm inspired. I'm a frustrated writer myself, but you're inspiring me to do the 100 days and get something out there. But how did you get your first one published? How did you find a publisher or an agent and all of that?
All right, the thing about E.G. Rollins is I thought I'd finished after Blonde Faith, but I realized a couple of years later that the reason I'd stopped is because I was no longer going to be talking about my father's world and experience, but I was going to be talking about mine. And I hadn't understood that. Once I got that, I could write Little Green, and I could just keep on from there. I understood that. It's interesting. The first book I wrote was Gone Fishing. I sent it out. Everybody said, oh, it's wonderful, it's good, it's this, it's that, but it's not a commercial. I said, what does that mean? I said, well, you know, it's about two young black men coming of age in the Deep South. You know, there's no white people, there's no black women. I mean, you know, white people don't read about black people, black women don't like black men, and black men don't read, so we can't publish your book. You know, they were wrong about all that stuff, but still, they didn't publish my book. Then I wrote the next one, still with E.G. Rollins and Mouse. Devil in a Blue Dress. And I sent it to an agent. She took it immediately. She sent it out to like seven publishers, and six of them wanted it. It was, from absolutely impossible to, hey, we'll want to do it.
Wow. Well, so Walter Mosley, there's something that Larry asked that I just want to follow up on a little bit. And, because he talked about his love for E.G. Rollins as a character, and he was glad that you'd started writing again. I'm wondering, do you ever reach a point with characters that become really beloved by fans where, as a writer, do you feel obligated may not be the right word, but do you feel a pressure to sort of have your character continue to conform to what might be fans' expectations? Or does the story ever evolve in a way where a character ends up doing something that fans may not actually ever expect him or her to do, and you worry about their response? Like, who owns this character after a while?
I do. I mean, every reader owns the novel, because when you read a novel, it's your novel. It's no longer mine. I can't come in and say you're wrong about what you're thinking. But people want me to do things, and that's all good and well, but I don't do it unless I want to do it. You know, that's, and I think that that's, you know, if a writer falls out of that, you know, particular sphere, they're going to be in trouble, you know, because what you're doing is you're not writing according to what comes up naturally every morning. You're writing according to what people are saying they want to see from you.
Right. Well, let's go to Chaz, who's calling from Coral Gables, Florida. Chaz, you're on the air.
Oh, my God, I can't believe I'm talking to Walter Mosley. Mr. Mosley, I heard you on a podcast, The Literary Life. I'm a friend of Mitchell Kaplan's. I live a mile away from Books and Books. I ran out. I got John Woman. I read it. I loved it. And then I got, this year, you write your novel, sir, and I am three-quarters of the way into my first novel. I've written plays. I've been produced. But I read your books, and it gave me the impetus and above all, the courage. So I want to thank you profusely. And I can't believe I'm talking to you, man.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Let's see if we can get another caller in here. You got a lot of fans. No surprise there, Walter Mosley. Let's see if we can go to Gus, who's calling from Asheville, New York. Gus, you're on the air.
Yes, Walter. I really enjoyed a lot of your characters and have read many of your books. I did attend a reading you did under the Brooklyn Bridge at a bookstore some years back, but one of your characters that's, I think, one of my favorite was a character named Socrates Fortlow. I think he was in a book called The Right Mistake, and I'm not sure if he has appeared since, but he brings out one of the wonderful qualities of fiction that you do so well, about a fallen guy and makes a terrible mess at a young age of his life, and comes back and puts his nose to the grindstone, and he fights his way back to a good life and a redeemed life. And I just wanted to express real appreciation for your writing.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. There hasn't been a book after the book you read, but before it, I wrote two books, Always Outnumbered, Always Outgunned, which is also a movie with Lawrence Fishburne, and Walking the Dog. So if you haven't seen those two, they're the earlier iterations.
Yeah. Well, we have about a minute left to go, Mr. Mosley. And I just wanted to ask you one last question about the dedication in your book, In Elements of Fiction. Mm-hmm. You dedicate it to John Singleton. The late John Singleton, I should say, and you call him one of the most original and creative individuals I have ever known. Can you tell us more about why he is in the dedication of your book?
Well, you know, I've been working with John for the last 4 years, a little bit more, on the show Snowfall, the television show Snowfall, and as a writer, as an advisor. And, John, just being around John, listening to John, he was so quirky and nerdy but brilliant and so committed to the story that he wanted to tell. I mean, he was born in South Central. He lived in South Central. He worked there. If you went on the set, there's all these people in the crew saying, yeah, man, I just got out of prison. I went to John, and John said, okay, you can come work with us. You know, he just did everything. He's such a wonderful guy. And, Boys in the Hood is completely original.
Yeah.
I mean, he made new film with that movie.
Well, Walter Mosley, best-selling novelist of more than 50 books. His latest book is Elements of Fiction, and we have an excerpt of it at onpointradio.org. Mr. Mosley, it's been so wonderful to spend this past hour with you. Thank you so much.
And thank you, too, Meghna. It was really enjoyable.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.